Word Salad Radio presents Dick Picks. I'm your host, Joe Ketchum, and I'm joined today by Johnny Blaze, of all people.
Hey, John, of all the people. How's it going? In the warming up state of Michigan, we're doing fine. Day off. Well, I'm actually in the middle of a vacation, but it would have been a day off.
Vacation's
anyway.
Always nice. I got my vacation coming up for Thanksgiving soon.
Oh, yeah.
When this will be dropping around the time that my Christmas break begins.
Nice.
A little bit before my Christmas break starts, which will be awesome. 3 weeks back in Chicago, freezing, frigid Chicago.
Going up north for a vacation.
Yeah. I realized yesterday that, like, me and Amanda have our trips planned for next semester, and she's not coming out to Nevada until May to move me back for the summer. I'm going to Chicago twice, cool. And then we're spending spring break in the Caribbean, but that's it.
Oh. So,
and she was going to come out in April, but I got a free trip to Chicago for an academic conference for my school. So I was like, yeah, we'll totally do that.
No, that worked out nicely.
It worked out perfect. Like, I wasn't that into going. I was like, yeah, I guess I could go if you really want me to. It's always fun to travel, but whatever. And they're like, it's in Chicago. I was like, oh, fuck yeah, man.
Is this your first Dick Picks?
This is episode one of Dick Picks. So we should probably explain the idea.
Tricorn hat wearing pioneers.
That's right. So the idea of Dick Picks, actually, I pitched this a while ago to someone else who lives in Michigan and I don't have a way to record with anymore. But I was like, what if we chose a terrible movie to force the other person to watch, and then we record an episode where we try to defend that the movie was not that bad, or that the movie was ideally amazingly good. And I feel like if I had come up with the title Dick Picks earlier, it would have fallen into place before I moved. But we were like really struggling with what to call the thing. And then Dick Picks came to me. Actually, I was inspired by the Netflix and Swill podcast, because they have a segment where they like force each other. They like pick something for the other one to watch or something like that. And I thought it should be called Dick Picks. Like, I was trying to think of puns of Netflix or something that rhymed with Netflix. And I came up with Dick Picks. I was like, oh, that's funny. And then I was like, oh, I could do that. I have a podcast.
If only. Oh, wait.
If only I could do these things myself. So, yeah.
But, yeah, no, I'm appreciative that I'm the first victim here. I do love defending a bad movie.
As you have done before on the podcast, it's kind of your thing.
My own volition. Yeah. Without even a fancy show. Just anybody not familiar, the best Star Wars movie probably on balance is episode one. And somebody shared an article with me the other day, like, defending it, and it's like, yeah, that movie stock is on the rise.
I watched the whole trilogy, the whole prequel trilogy recently. I was like, man, I do not hate these nearly as much as I remember hating them. I was
right?
Like, there's kind of subtle things where they set up Palpatine's rise to power and how he's playing all the strings and, you know, doing everything behind the scenes. Like, that's actually pretty well structured.
I could do a whole podcast about the nuance and subtlety in the prequels.
I think we've already done two podcasts about that.
Oh, shoot. Which we've done episode one and two. Do we?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we've done one and two.
Okay.
And maybe for Star Wars Day, we'll move on to Revenge of the Sith now that you can record.
Right.
Record things.
Yeah, definitely. I also genuinely love Rogue One. That's probably actually my favorite Star Wars movie, but I know a lot of people don't have to defend.
Rogue One is phenomenal. I think objectively, it's the best Star Wars movie. It's not my favorite one, but it's awesome.
Yeah, because I think it, like, despite the legacy involved, it basically works on its own. Like, you don't really need to know New Hope. It's like kind of a cool war movie, but in a sci-fi universe.
Totally. It works really well. But anyway, we're eating up our time. We got to talk about our Dick Picks. This is first episode. It's also our Christmas episode, so we went with some Christmassy Dick Picks.
Christmassy Dick Picks.
So, Johnny, why don't you give us a little introduction into the movie that I forced you to watch against your will?
Oh, I'm glad you did. This instant Christmas classic, 48 Christmas Wishes, 2017. Yep. Just pulling up my little cheat sheet here. Yeah, 2017, Netflix exclusive, I believe. Starring a bunch of kids. It's a very kid-heavy movie. So if you don't like kids, which I definitely love kids 100%, you will maybe, you will definitely love this movie.
If you
movie.
Don't love kids, which Johnny does, you will love this movie. Just to reiterate that.
If, yeah, tons of kids. The elves are played by kids pretending to be, like, not kids. And then there's some regular kids, and they're 90% of the cast, and you've got a couple adults kind of sprinkled in. But, yeah, you know, really just across the board, incredible child acting. Definitely. The adults are also good. And the script, mwah, mwah, incredible script. The direction, everything across the board, it just comes together to be an instant Christmas classic. Some rascally elves goofing around lose a bunch of Christmas letters, and so they have to go incognito and recover them by hand and learn the true meaning of Christmas along the way, which apparently they didn't know, even though they're, like, living and breathing for Christmas 365 days a year. Still got to learn the true meaning of Christmas.
Well, when you're living it all the time, it's hard to remember it exactly.
Oh, yeah. When your Christmas life has become a Christmas cult, you really got to step back and, oh, I'll get into that later.
Well,
also subtle horror undertones of this movie. But let's hear about your actual subtle overtones of your horror movie.
Well, let's listen to the trailer for, what's it called? 68 Christmas
48.
Wishes? 48 Christmas Wishes.
48 Christmas Wishes.
All right, here's a trailer.
It was the night before Christmas.
I'm launching a new initiative.
We'll be ready to fly by tomorrow night.
Fabulous!
Well, that's a first.
Christmas wishes were delivered to the workshop with care.
Each one of these wishes comes from a human. It's their happiness in our hands.
You're stepping on that human's happiness.
And all of those wishes.
Hey, Sammy, heads up! Come on, it's your turn!
Would be lost in a flare.
No!
To save Christmas.
We just lost 48 wishes.
They'll have to come to our world.
Excuse us!
Are you actual elves?
I don't think so. That's impossible.
You guys don't know much about humans, do you?
To remind an entire town what Christmas is all about.
I want Christmas to feel like Christmas.
48 Christmas Wishes.
With a few ho-ho-hos, you'll be good to go.
All right. I totally listened to that, and it sounds awesome.
I want to watch it again already.
Well, I was gifted the opportunity to rewatch a movie that we've actually already talked about on the podcast briefly a couple years ago. It's called Santa's Sleigh from 2005, and it is just a modern Christmas classic. It tells the story of a plucky teenage boy who, you know, he's trying to make things work with his girlfriend, and he has an adorable grandfather who builds bomb shelters, and he is tormented by Santa Claus, who lost a bet 1,000 years ago to make him more jolly, make him so he can't just go out and slaughter people once a year. He has to be the Santa Claus we all know and love. And now that 1,000 years is up, he's come for the family that imprisoned him in Christmas all those years ago. So it's just awesome. I can't get enough of Santa's Sleigh, which is spelled S-L-A-Y, because wordplay.
Classic. When you have a holiday movie and a horror movie, the wordplay sells those tickets.
Oh, man. And if you love action and teenagers who swear and weird meta jokes and awkward kissing scenes and curling, then you are absolutely gonna love Santa's Sleigh. So let's listen to the trailer for that.
Grandpa, I want the truth about Christmas.
If it's the truth you want, then it's the scary truth you're gonna have.
According to the Book of Claus, Santa, Satan's only son, lost a bet and was forced to spread Christmas cheer. But now, all bets are off.
there is a Santa Claus. Ho, ho, hoes.
Santa Claus is not a myth or a legend. He's real. Only he's not bearing gifts and presents anymore.
Christmas can sure scare the dickens out of people.
He's scary yet educational.
I'm just trying to spread a little Yuletide fear.
Are you saying Santa is offing everyone who's naughty and nice?
Oh my God! Nicholas shot him!
You shot Santa?
Run away! Santa's on the loose!
This holiday season.
Ho, ho, ho!
Lock your doors. Bolt the windows.
Oh, Grandpa got run over by a reindeer.
Everyone stand back. Things are about to get a little messy.
And block the chimney. Cause naughty or nice, Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa's sleigh.
Go ahead, kids. Let's see what Santa got you.
I hate children.
In a world where Bill Goldberg needs a paycheck.
Okay.
I'm pretty familiar with Santa Slays. I don't think I've seen it the whole way through, but like I know enough about it.
I'd seen it once before.
To believe you as to its quality.
Yeah. I'd seen it once before and it totally holds up. It's not at all uncomfortably homophobic.
Oh no.
So yeah, we're just gonna shoot the shit a bit.
Yeah, well I love kids movies, obviously. That's why I surround myself with my 80 children. Man, you can say what you will about the acting. They sure do try.
It's all about the effort with child acting, right? It's all
those kids who showed up and or producers' children's give it their all. I really like how the sad main elf Mindy really sells her character by never making eye contact with anybody and directing all of her lines straight to the ground. You really get the awkward uncomfortability of her character's role.
I mean, that's just relatable. That's just, you know, I often look at the ground and can't make eye contact with anyone.
And let me tell you, it's great to watch in a movie. It's really compelling when your lead is like, I don't know, reading her lines off the ground, you know, whatever she's doing, looking at everywhere but who she's talking to. I never knew I needed that in an actor.
I mean, that's all well and good, but does your movie 108 Christmas Wishes have a brilliant opening scene where Santa kills Fran Drescher and Chris Kattan and James Caan?
Oh God. I can't. He doesn't. It's the opening scene is, gosh, I'm remembering it. There's just so many good parts of the movie.
It is Trey Magnifique.
It is nobody getting slaughtered. Unfortunately, I'm guessing they're saving it for the sequel.
Kattan gets punched like through a wall, which is epic. And then James Caan he gets essentially crucified to the table. His hands get like stabbed to the table, and Fran Drescher gets lit up on fire. So, you know, it's pretty balls to the wall right away. It's unbelievable.
The only thing murdered in my opening scene was this family's togetherness. And the only person to die was the kid's dad. Well, he's already dead, I should say. And the son, who's too young to remember him, Blake, and the older daughter, Emma, who definitely remembers him and is heckin' sad about it. But is that sort of sad where you like lash out and hate it? And their dad was, of course, King Christmas of their town, always got super into it. So now she hates it. But Blake is the walking, talking spirit of Christmas in boy form. So he's decorating the house and she's having none of
it. So this is a brother and sister and their dad is King of Christmas. What is that?
Well, he was like, he would every year deliver 'Twas the Night Before Christmas at some rote town, I mean really lovely Christmas like pageant that usually starts, which we see later, with a bunch of kids dancing around. I'm guessing this movie needed to save money for its incredible special effects, and so they cut the choreographer. But their dad was always known for wearing the Santa suit and delivering "'Twas the Night Before Christmas." But he dies of some sort of thing you go to a hospital and die of. They don't really say.
The dad dies?
Yeah, well, before the movie. 6 years before this movie takes place.
And now the daughter kind of associates her father's death with the death of Christmas or something?
Yeah, just hates it and doesn't want to participate and thinks it's all stupid. And it's all just about plastic junk anyway. And while she's completely right, it's portrayed as a bad thing in this movie.
Is she a teenage girl?
She is a young teenager who doesn't have time for her mom, who also super loves Christmas. I didn't catch her name. The mom.
Yeah.
Mom Williams.
And then the son, I'm guessing, is considerably younger.
Yeah, he died 6 years ago and he's two, so he's like eight now, yeah. I guess. Oh, the mom, Laura. Yeah. And then, so that's kind of how the movie begins, is Blake is all about the holiday and Emma is not about the holiday. So, and then
my movie may not have any,
to the elves.
My movie may not have any like teenage stereotype girls, but it does have a little old lady who tells a little Jewish man to go fuck himself. So it's because it's Christmas.
It's a
delightful scene. Like he runs this deli. And she's in there to buy a sandwich, and it's like $5. And she's giving him shit about the senior discount, and he's like takes a quarter off for the senior discount, and that appeases this little old lady who, society treats the elderly pretty badly. So I understand why she's upset about her lack of discount. But then he tells her a happy holiday, and she says to shove that holiday shit up his, or political bullshit up his ass, or whatever. And say, tell her Merry Christmas. So, you know, we got a real war on Christmas commentary here. And it's like, it's just not uncomfortable at all.
The war on Christmas is out there, old lady. And Bill Goldberg's here to enact it.
The war on Christmas is now Christmas is having war on you.
I don't want to jump to the end, but you mentioned that Bill Goldberg is after the family that put him in this like situation, yeah. But didn't an angel do it?
Goldberg lost a bet to an angel during they invented curling. Essentially, they have a curling match, which, you know, I have some vague issues that I can dismiss with the curling match. Otherwise, in an otherwise perfect movie, the curling mechanics are a little wonky. But he loses this curling match. And he can't be evil. He can't kill anyone for 1,000 years. He has to bring gifts and be joyful. But yes, then the angel in the mythology gives up his immortality to marry a woman, a human, and they have kids and grandkids. And our main character, Nick, is his grandson.
So he is the descendant of an angel. I just wanted to make sure I understood that, I'm sure, key point.
Yes, it's super key because, you know, until then, it's like this mystery thriller. You're like, why is Santa after this kid so bad? Why doesn't he go somewhere where he can slaughter a lot of people? At first glance, it seems really, really stupid. And then it like reveals that they have this history that the kid's not even aware of. It's like, mind blowing. It's like one of the great cinematic reveals of our time, man.
A Shyamalan twist.
Yeah, it's up there with like good Shyamalan, man. It's like up there with Glass. I was trying to think of the other one. Oh, Split. Like the twist of Split is kind of that level of twist.
What was the twist in Split?
The twist in Split is just that it's in the Unbreakable universe.
Oh God! Okay,
that's the twist. But like,
he's got real superpowers.
No, he doesn't have any superpowers. He's just a guy because the angel gave up his superpowers and married a human. They had human kids and human grandkids, so no one has any powers except for when the angel dies. He comes back as an angel.
Seems like a real sacrifice.
Yeah, it's.
Wait, didn't he become mortal?
Yeah, he became mortal, and he dies and goes to heaven. Apparently, is granted angel status again, so he comes back to Earth to help out in the climax to save his grandson from Satan Santa.
So he was mortal, but he that was just so he could die. He still effectively could live forever. He wouldn't die of old age.
I think he would have died of old age, but maybe he has a longer lifespan just because, you know, he was an angel.
I'm just trying to make sure I understand the parameters of the Santa Slay cinematic universe.
Oh, I can only hope we get a cinematic universe from this, and we're still waiting on that sequel 14 years later.
Oh, man. My movie has a very insidious sequel hook that I'll get to at the end. Yeah, I'm really excited for 49 Christmas wishes.
49 Christmas wishes. It's like,
I don't know where
you'll
you
never
go.
Believe it happened again, but this time it's 49.
I haven't watched the first 47 movies in the series.
So
I didn't feel like I missed anything. I think this was maybe a soft reboot. I don't feel like I was missing anything.
Okay. I just wanted to wrap up with the little old lady. She gets killed by Santa.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's driving super slow and he's on his sleigh when he's trying to get around her. And she won't move and she won't speed up. So he runs her off the road with his sleigh and slays her. Which, you gotta hand it to him because Santa's sleigh could fly. So he could just fly over them and go wherever he wants. But he likes obeying the rules of the road other than, you know, running people off the road.
Yeah, well, what's he going to do, hit some birds up there?
Yeah, he doesn't want to.
There's plenty of squishy people down here.
Yeah, he's got to slay as many people as possible. He's not got to do that flying around in the air. He's got to slay people on the ground, so makes sense. Makes total sense.
I'm guessing one plane crash would be the population of this town, but no worries.
Yeah, I mean, he could probably take out a plane, and maybe that would up his slay quotient, but he's really focused. You got to admire that about this Santa character, that he's super focused on his goal, on his objective.
So, with 48 Wishes, one thing that's really interesting is there's no real center protagonist, which, as we all know in most screenwriting, is usually a good call.
Yeah. I mean, it's super boring that 99% of things have a protagonist. I mean...
Yeah, but this movie really just... On top of the kids, the Williamses, we move to the elves, played by children, not little people, which, hey, that's something different. There's Mindy, Sammy, and Cam are the three main ones. Mindy is like, she's a STEM. She's a STEM girl. She wants to be a builder. Her parents were builders, but she got put in the mailroom.
Wah, wah.
That's so boring. Getting everybody's wishes and then telling the builders what to build or breed, because there's definitely a lot of animal requests. I definitely wish this movie took us to, like, the stables where they breed all the hamsters and puppies for the kids, but we don't get to see it, alas. There's Sammy. She's, like, their operator. She loves the mailroom. And then Cam is a short, funny one. That's his character.
It sounds like the mailroom for the elves parallels the idea of Christmas for the human characters. Like, one of them loves it, one of them hates it. Are there other parallels between the elf characters humans?
I guess there isn't a great mom parallel. There's George, their boss, and he's probably the best part of the North Pole. His kind of beleaguered reactions. He's got like a Jim Carrey rubber face and he uses it. And he's kind of, well, they're lying and avoiding him because in this dystopic North Pole, elves are not allowed to leave, we learn. And it's definitely some sort of elf police state keeping them there. We don't see it in the movie. It's just implied. But they can't... they are messing around with a bag of letters. And Mindy accidentally throws it into a fireplace. And it goes up in a puff of really great for 2001 CGI magic explosion.
This is like...
Great
like for... Like Sam Raimi's Spider-Man era CGI.
Mid-90s CGI.
Mortal Kombat CGI.
It would have looked... Oh, blows Mortal Kombat Annihilation out of the water. That is the praise I'm giving it. This looks incredible for 1997. They don't overuse it, thankfully, because, you know, a choreographer budget only buys so much CGI. Right. So they lose all the wishes, and they're like, what do we do? So they talk to the elf that knows everything is the only name we give this character. It's not Santa. I guess Santa is probably also an elf that knows everything, but that's not his title. I'm still trying to figure out the socio-political kind of strata of the North Pole.
Maybe the Santa of your movie is the same Santa as my movie, and they're afraid of Santa because he will just murder them. if they go to him with any problems.
This movie actually could be the prequel to Santa Slays. I'm going to have to think about that.
Right.
Because, we'll get to that. Well, Santa has a machine that helps him see everything. What drives his omnipotence. It's called the He Knows Machine, which doesn't sound spooky. It's He Knows is one word, and the according to the subtitles, the H and the K are capitalized, but it's still one word. So he's got his He Knows machine, and it looks like a giant Hellraiser sphere with these like chains over it, and it looks like kind of like a snowball. And he's like tinkering with it in the beginning of the movie, and it's exactly as insidious as you think it is. But apparently this machine that lets him see everything and what everybody's saying, whatever he wants, is still not good enough.
Interesting.
He's not a human. Santa's not a human because he refers to humans as humans. I'm guessing he's also an elf, but they don't really make it clear. So he could definitely be whatever demon Bill Goldberg is in Santa Slays.
But in Santa Slays,
also comment,
there's this whole rich background, this whole rich mythology, where Jesus is the product of Mary's virgin birth, and Santa is the product of Satan's virgin birth with Cruella or something like that. It's like there's a Satan also got a virgin pregnant, and she made an Antichrist. She made Satan or Santa.
Was it around the same time as like Jesus's birth?
I think so. It's not clear. It's just a long, long time ago. I guess it was only 1,000 years ago that the bet happened. So that would leave another 1,000 years of Santa slaying if he was born around the same time as Jesus. So yeah, it could be. But why didn't the angel intercede sooner? I guess is my question.
Well, he's like Santa's kid. There's probably some nepotism protecting him.
Yeah, probably. He's like had a figure out a way to get in there and plot out his curling strike. I don't know. But there's a rich mythology. He's got this whole book about everything. It's written in Norwegian or something. And it really gives the characters a drive because Grandpa has believed that this bet was coming to an end for a long time. And we find out later that he knows it's coming to an end because he was the angel. But He's been preparing, and he's been trying to prepare his son. He builds an entire bomb shelter in his basement by himself in 2 days, like a legit bomb shelter with a door that...
Well, he's an angel,
he doesn't
right?
have it. He's immortal. He gave up his angel powers, so maybe he had like angel help to build it, but the...
Called in an angel favor.
Yeah, called in... He must have called in all his angel favors.
Michael, remember that time I made that hooker disappear?
Gabriel, you remember when I got rid of that heroin, no questions asked? I need a bomb shelter in my basement, and my grandson can't know about it. He has to think I did it all by myself. So make it happen, you winged bastard.
So the elves in 48 Ways go to the elf that knows everything and ask, well, it's not a big deal if we just lose the orders of 48 people from this town. What's the worst that can happen? Well, it turns off, if I understand the movie correct, there's a lot going on, very intellectual, but if I understand the movie correctly, if they don't, it will create like a hating Christmas feedback loop, which will in a few years cause the destruction of Christmas. I don't know how they know that, but the guy's name is Elf Who Knows Everything, so I'm going to take his word for it. But it will make people so sad that they'll hate Christmas, and that will spread to other people, which kind of hinted at with Emma, and cause them to hate Christmas. And then eventually the destruction of Christmas as we know it. And then I think the elves are like powered by our thoughts and prayers and wishes. So then they'll disappear. Like I said, very intellectual, very kind of metaphysical,
very highbrow,
philosophical.
Yeah. It sounds
like
it.
Yeah, very highbrow 48 Christmas
wishes. I
feel like
there was another Christmas movie I saw. It might have been, I think it was the Kurt Russell Christmas Chronicles from last year.
Yeah.
I think in that movie it had like similarly high stakes, where it's like there's not enough Christmas spirit, and if the Christmas spirit dies, a post-apocalyptic wasteland will follow. So it's real like it's like really pro-Christmas propaganda.
Yeah, no, definitely a lot of that going on here. I mean, it might have happened anyway, since like the North Pole has melted through. Maybe in the sequel we'll figure out why that happened.
The North Pole melts in this movie?
Oh, no, I'm talking about real life.
Real North Pole has melted. Or it did over the summer.
Oh, I've got two funny observations from about this part in the movie. The human expert Cam, the short funny one, exasperately saying, some humans don't even have dogs as pets. I was like, man, I feel that on a really strong level, Cam. Why don't some humans have dogs as pets?
I mean, they can have mine if they want, because she's a lot of work. My wife wants another one, so I was like, I really don't want two dogs at the same time again. So everybody wins if we get rid of our current dog and my wife gets a new dog.
Oh, is River naughty?
she's so naughty, but she's adorable, so she gets a pass for pretty much anything.
That's important when you're a little monster. You got to be cute. Yeah. Also, Comet is a celiac. He can't have gluten, according to George
well,
the boss.
Well, that's a good idiosyncrasy.
He's got some sort of celiac disease. So we got to make sure if you're leaving out treats for the reindeer, gluten-free, please. Because we had to get in a really cheap-ass 2017 gluten-free joke.
I think we all always just left out carrots for the reindeer. It's like we wouldn't give them anything with gluten in it anyway. Cookies were for Santa.
Well, no, I think it was
carrots for the reindeer.
I think it was carrot cake had to be gluten free. Oh, okay.
Carrot
and
cake.
Then it's like, why don't you just give them a carrot?
Yeah, that's gluten free.
The movie
and better for
I think they're saving that for the. I think they're saving that for the sequel. I'm guessing
he's just gonna have a sugar crash over the Dakotas if you give him carrot cake. Plus he's celiac, so he's gonna have some digestive issues. So yeah, just stick with some carrots, like some good like energy foods for the reindeer. Santa too, that fat
you do not
bastard
want to
doesn't
mess
need
on
all
your
these
roof.
All this cookies.
Our introduction to Santa in this movie was him taste testing this year's official Christmas cookie, like he's a French nobleman with the peasants at the gate, sampling each cookie on its own.
Our introduction.
So he definitely needs a diet.
Our introduction to Santa, besides him killing everybody, like every time he meets someone new, they like comment on how fat he is. I was like, but he's Bill Goldberg, and he's just like ripped and enormous and broad and just like solid muscle. So that was weird.
Did they give him a gut at all? A belly, like a bowl full of jelly?
Not really. Like, you don't see him without a shirt on or anything, but like at the end, he's probably wearing his like most form-fitting outfit, and he looks great. He's just like this mountain of man. And so in the rest of the movie where he's wearing like a Santa-esque jacket, it looks like maybe he has a little bit more of a gut, but not really. It's weird.
He spent that last year of his imprisonment just like working out.
Yeah, this 1,000 years of just getting ripped and ready for his revenge.
Well, he spent 1,000 years like a fat jolly dude eating Christmas cookies.
Right.
But you know, when you're about to go on a murderous rampage, hard to waddle around. Picturing him with a bow flex he didn't give somebody. He's just like pumping iron all fucking year, just waiting.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think that's exactly what happens.
We got them, yeah. Because these are part of the same cinematic universe, so we got to connect them.
Does 48 Wishes have lots and lots of naked women in it? Because Santa's sleigh does.
I think they were saving that for
the
sequel.
Saving that for 49 Wishes. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Because Santa at one point early in the movie, there's a preacher who's encouraging his congregation to give as much as they can to the church and to charity and to really feel the Christmas spirit. But what's really genius about Santa's sleigh is that then it subverts those expectations by having the preacher take those donations and go to a strip club.
Oh,
where
wow.
Santa Claus.
A movie with a scummy preacher?
I know,
preacher?
Right? It's never been done before that I can think of. Santa shows up at the same strip club and starts killing everybody. I'm not sure why. He's not looking for Nick there or the angel there. He's just like, it's just on his way. He hasn't slayed anyone in a while. So like, well, I'm going to stop off here and slay some people. But it makes for some kick-ass action.
This Santa sounds like he should be appreciating the hookers and strippers more than like murdering them. I don't know.
All he cares about is the sleigh. That's all he cares about. He doesn't want sex. Apparently, he's married. Like, it's established that Mrs. Claus is a character. Like, he is married to a Mrs. Claus still. So an interesting twist on the mythology because, like, is Mrs. Claus evil? Or is she like the Mrs. Claus we know and now her husband has turned evil? Like, how is that going to change the relationship now that he's a different person? It's like it's the Buffy Angel thing all over again.
This sounds like it could be a great Rob Zombie vehicle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like him and his crazy hot wife being Mr. and Mrs. Claus, and then it's like, I don't know, the fourth movie in their like whatever psychobilly trilogy they got going on. They just need to reboot Santa Slays, get Mrs. Claus in there.
I would kill for that sequel. I would slay for that sequel.
Slay queen.
There's something else I was going to mention with that. Oh, the action at the strip club is some of the best in the movie, particularly a part where Santa neutralizes the bouncer of the strip club by wrapping a wreath around his neck, spinning around and flipping him over his back. It's such a cool move.
Yeah, that's like a wrestling move, right?
Yeah.
I feel like Bill Goldberg's going to be definitely doing a bunch of wrestling moves to these poor people.
I remembered
people.
Him, the first time I watched it, I remembered him like doing a spear dive through the deli counter to get at the deli guy, but I didn't, I was like making a note during that this time because I missed it.
Goldberg spear.
Yeah, the spear. But yeah, he does a lot. He really gets into the physicality of the character in a way I've never seen before.
Shakespearean.
It's very Shakespearean, yes. It's like he plays this character with every cell in his body.
All good. You like an actor who really commits to the role.
Yes, and you like an actor who's not an actor, right? We don't need another one of these professional trained actors in a movie. Like, we've seen that over and over again. It's like, let's get a Bill Goldberg in there, you know, just a regular guy who can crush your head with his hand if he wants. And that's real acting to me now. It's like actors are like, anytime Anne Hathaway's in a movie, I know she's acting. I know she's pretending. Bill Goldberg seems like he could really kill people.
Well, that's why Dwayne Johnson got away with it.
That's right. He made the transition.
But he could do both.
He's a man of many talents. I suppose. Hashtag Moana sequel. Give me a Moana sequel.
Just about his character.
Yeah, just about him. Well, I mean, about Moana. I just want all Moana all the time. I don't know why Disney's making Frozen sequels when they haven't done it. They haven't announced a Moana sequel. What the hell? What's with your priorities?
They're afraid of money and success.
Yeah, I guess. They're afraid of my business, he said, as he has 3 years of Disney Plus already paid for.
Oh, man. Ugh. I want it, but I don't want it.
Yeah, I understand. I'd wait a little bit. Wait till they get more of the stuff. I wish I had a roommate who would
get it. Yeah, is the whole MCU on there?
I haven't checked because I own the whole MCU, so I don't know if it's all on Disney Plus.
I feel like if like all 20 so movies are on there, I might consider it. But
certainly, most of them are on there. Like, I think the only one that might not be on. I mean, there might be other sporadic ones. I don't know if they had the rights to do like Incredible Hulk or something like that, but. I don't think Far From Home is on there yet.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm sure the Sony ones will
Sony won't be on there at all.
Dragged out.
So no Far From Home, no Homecoming, and probably no Incredible Hulk because that's another studio problem. But I haven't checked.
That was a Universal.
Paramount.
Well, back to these, you know, MCU's so yesterday.
I mean, the
it's
MCU's,
all about 48
MCU's
Christmas wishes.
Hat. Like, their Christmas movie sucked. So
we need to hear more about the Christmas Wish cinematic universe.
That's right.
So the elves, their genius plan, and this is where we learn that they can't leave, is they leave the North Pole. They go to the one city where all the mail came from using the mail tube. So this is a fun fact. All those like funny cardboard boxes you see at post office and around town where you can leave Santa's letters. Turns out they literally lead to magic pipes that go to the North Pole.
Really?
Fun fact. So yeah, like if you ever need to get to the North Pole in a hurry, according to the elves in this movie, you just hop into one of those containers and there's a big gold tube that takes you right to the North Pole.
Wow. I might
so they
try
ride
that out
that
later.
Back out. Yeah, I highly recommend it to anybody, especially kids listening at home. They take the tube disguised. They put on their human disguises, which are iridescent wind suits. They're like very flashy. They look like they're going to the club, and they go out of their way to not conceal their ears and their hats, and go through the tube and end up at the post office in the city, and of course run into our boy Blake, the Christmas miracle in boy form himself. And Blake offers his services in helping the elves get the wishes.
Wow.
Before they're found out, I'm guessing their families are killed. The North Pole is run with a candy cane fist.
That is thrilling. That is exactly what I want from a Christmas movie about 48 wishes.
Not too many, but you know, enough to really fill up a hour-long movie. And the ever-present, you know, threat of George discovering him while Sammy is also doing her own hijinks, hiding the fact that they have left. Mostly lying, a lot of lies, really teaching kids the advantages of lying to your boss at work.
Wow. Well, I'm choosing to take your praise of the characters in 48 Wishes as a direct attack on me and Santa's sleigh. So I just want to talk about our characters in Santa's sleigh a little bit, defend them from your unwarranted attacks. So we have our teenager Nick and his girlfriend Mary, and it's a real relationship. You know, it's not this cheesy Hollywood, everything works out great relationship. No, they call each other retards and they make weird, like, gender non-specific cracks at each other. Like, Nick tells Mary she kisses like a boy, which I guess is a bad thing. I don't know.
Yeah,
but, you know, it really,
boys are legendarily bad kissers. Yeah.
But it's real. It feels real. I was like, I recognize that this is a working relationship that you have to work on, and it's hard work, and they work on it. So it's just
too
inspiring.
Often Hollywood just makes it look easy.
Hollywood just throws all that stuff out the window and is like, love at first sight, and the music swells, and no one ever calls anyone a retard. So, but as we all know, in real relationships, that happens all the time. All the time. Plus, Nick is super smart. He can add 1,000 to, like, any number, like, almost immediately.
Wow. So,
I mean, he figures out that this year's 1,000 years past the date, the bet of the Santa and the angel, like, within a minute.
That's some Nicolas Cage National Treasure figuring out.
I know
shit.
It's that. It's some Rain Man shit. Like, he's next level. he's something special. And Mary is more of like the street smart one. I was like, I don't know if she could add 1,000 to any number like Nick, but she's really like emotionally centered, and she brings Nick this. He mentions to her that when he was a kid, he always wanted an Optimus Prime toy, and he only ever got an Easy Bake Oven. They call it something else, but it's essentially an Easy Bake Oven. And
she
shows up with a gun that transforms into a robot like Optimus Prime, which we all know. We all know Optimus Prime is a robot that turns into a gun, a very, very realistic looking gun that will not come back into play in the rest of the movie. it's like Chekhov's gun. Except it is pointless, and that's what makes it great. I think a lesser writer would have used this toy transformer gun to like threaten Goldberg, threaten Santa, and get out of some hairy situation, even though it's just a toy and we know it's a toy. But no, they just leave it at the house and go on about the movie, and they don't worry about it at all.
This is a new trope. It's Optimus's gun. When the clear weapon they give you in Act One never comes up again.
Because Optimus is Optimus.
As opposed to, everybody knows Optimus Prime is the one who becomes the gun.
I mean, that's how I choose to remember it.
That's, for this movie's sake, me too. I'm going to make a long story short and cut through the comedic montage, we'll say, of the kids getting all of the Christmas wishes. You can think of any number of hilarious hijinks that they just can't overhear what the person says because they're in band practice, or the person's sick and keeps throwing up between their you know what they're saying. And but they do it. They eventually get all the Christmas wishes except like a couple. And so they have to stick around for the Christmas pageant that is also dear to the Williamses because their dad did it. But then the elves get roped into the show-stopping choreography number at the end, but learn even looking ridiculous and like your director's not giving you true action, you can still have fun.
Love it. I love a good pageant.
Yeah, man. And then, did bring a tear to my eye because at the very end, the very last wish they have to get is the mom's wish, who is the only adult to write a letter to Santa that year.
Whoa.
And she just wanted her family. It does. She just wanted her family to be together for Christmas. And when the elves see her crying at the pageant, they think they fucking failed. And I was like a little perplexed because the kids are coming together and they're reading Twas the Night Before Christmas because they found their dad's stash that their mom never let them go through because she was so sad about it. But it's got his Santa suit and his like really ratty copy of the poem that he printed out maybe 10 years ago. And they say it together and the mom loves it and it brought their family together. Yada, yada.
What's the craziest wish that the elves pull off in this movie?
Oh man. Well, one girl will only tell it to Santa himself. So they have to get, that's how they get the dad's Santa suit is they got to like, I don't know. They're framing it like they got to trick the girl, but the kid is clearly, he's not wearing a beard or anything. He's clearly just a guy in a Santa suit, but apparently that was enough. That was one I remember. Oh, somebody wanted a hamster, and that's what really got my brain cooking on the, like, oh my God, are there breeding farms in the North Pole? Are there hamster mills?
Interesting. Interesting.
But in the North Pole, they have tubes where the requests go, and I'm hoping they're categories, because there's only, like, seven tubes. I'm like, man, I hope... Like, are there only seven options when you request a present from Santa?
Huh.
So I'm going to choose... But I saw both, like, a hamster and a puppy on the tube, so, like, I don't know, man. Maybe kids are just really boring in the Christmas Wishes universe.
They only want seven things. One of seven things.
There's probably a poem in that universe. The only seven things you can ask from Santa. We don't have it in our universe. Our Santa's a lot more generous.
Yeah, yeah. I want to go back a little bit with Santa's sleigh. Because I feel like it might have sounded like I was criticizing this masterpiece when I said that I didn't understand why Santa stopped off at the strip club to slay people who weren't his primary target. The movie actually does reveal a reason at the police station later, because the murders on a map form the shape of a Christmas tree.
Oh.
So Santa is killing in a very specific, methodical way to like toy with the police. Exactly, that's exactly what I wrote down. I was like, this is some seven level shit. Fincher can go fuck himself, because he didn't come up with Santa killing people in the shape of a Christmas tree. He came up with a boring serial killer played by a child rapist who kills people based on the seven deadly sins. Like, yawn, give me a break. Santa's sleigh is where it's at.
It's really more creative this way, because you can see it on a map.
Yeah, it's very, it's so like, oh, visual. It's
festive.
Yeah. I mean, everything is so visual. The kills are visual, and then we got the map and the police working it out, and the one cop, you just know that like his marriage is falling apart because he's got to crack this case, and he's turned to drugs and alcohol to get by and cope with what he's seen. Yeah, you know, it's just, you never seen that in a cop movie, and I feel like that's what's going on.
People can relate to seeing a Christmas tree on a map. Who's Catholic anymore to understand the seven deadly sins?
Right?
No one. Exactly. That's who. Not even the Pope's Catholic.
I mean, it's not like he's killing in the shape of a religious symbol, since he comes from Christian mythology. It's like, no, he's a Christmas tree. It's almost like a fuck you to everything he's been forced to do for the last 1,000 years.
A Christmas tree is like a kind of a complicated spiky cross. It could be an insult against his,
I mean, they're both made out of wood, so there's that. There's that connection.
I don't even wait for it to get turned into a cross before I'm using it.
That's right. It's just he's done his killings in the shape of a pre-cross.
He's more eco-friendly.
Yeah, yeah, it's very eco-friendly. It's like, well, the tree serves a purpose as long as you don't cut it down, like, you know. So he's a complicated fellow, this Santa. It's like, yeah, he's evil and he kills people, but he wants the Earth to stick around long enough for him to keep killing people.
For a big dude, he's got a small carbon footprint.
What does 48 Wishes do in terms of Christmas carols? How's the music?
Well, the soundtrack is like the most kind of like fill in the, like, I believe the Christmas music software fills it in automatically as the example. But I remember thinking of, like, if I just wanted a really standard Christmas score, lots of horns and, you know, passing references to Christmas tunes, there's lots of that. But I can't say there were many Christmas songs. They did Twas the Night Before Christmas, and their dog's name was Jingle, but I don't think they ever, like, sang. I don't remember singing.
Oh, so just,
what,
like,
what they
score,
did do, though...
Like- Christmas, Christmas-y,
yeah, there's a
scoring.
Lot of score, and I'm trying to remember if there's even like a rote carol or scene, and I can't think of any. What they did have, though, and my last big comment on this is the Elvish swear words. And I took some time. There wasn't any sort of translation, but I worked it out with my knowledge of Elvish. So if you hear an elf say rolling snowballs, that roughly equivalates to holy shit. They had a few good ones. Father Christmas is, based on context, it sounded like God damn it. I have the list here. They were really consistent about it's when they used rolling snowballs, it was usually all pretty like, holy shit, sugar plums is roughly equivalents to fuck. And then holly jolly, that was like Jesus Christ. So if you hear an elf swearing, you can translate it. Because they were, you know, every situation calls for its swear word.
What do you think the Elvish version of the C word would be?
Reindeer hooves.
Cookie cutter.
you're a candy cane and no mistake.
Hey, how dare you, sir?
I'm sorry. I didn't.
You took it too far.
I did. I was letting the Christmas spirit get too far.
I don't need your Elvish slurs.
Katie Kane wearing mother. All right. But 48 Wishes ends with Santa and the elves creepily looking in on the Williamses as they are together, and Santa announcing his plan for next Christmas.
Oh.
He's going to insert Elvish sleeper agents throughout the planet and deliver presents all year long.
So every day is Christmas? Like all of a sudden you just randomly get Christmas presents?
That was the implication I got, and I have never been more scared at the conclusion of a movie since Alien Covenant.
I mean, it does have a weird, that's a weird sequel setup, but I guess it could be interesting as it's an interesting metaphor for like, just let's give, if one day isn't enough to keep the Christmas spirit alive, then we'll have Christmas all year round, and then they have to be Christmas spirity.
And it's not about what you ask Santa for. He thinks, you know, you just, your dumb human brain is only asking for stuff. He needs to know what you really need. Whether it's happiness or family coming together or whatnot. But apparently if you ask for like, I don't know, like a gadget or a toy, that's not good enough for Santa. He needs to know what you really, truly need.
Well, Santa's sleigh ends with, I mean, I wanted to mention the music quickly. It does have a lot of cool like rock and roll or hip hoppy versions of Christmas songs or original Christmas songs that are, you know, that's all I need from a Christmas movie is don't give me the same old Christmas songs I've heard over and over again and can't stand. Like, give me new, less terrible Christmas songs.
were they riffs of classics though?
Some of them are like riffs of classics or have allusions to classics, and some of them were completely original. I wrote down a couple of titles. There's like Christmas hip hop going on at the strip club. I think it was around that time. And it was called Rock the Bells. But I can't remember how it goes. And then near the end, the end credits has a kind of a poppy song called Bye Bye Santa. Like kind of a rock and roll Christmas carol, Bye Bye Santa.
That's a good outro for him.
Yeah, that'll probably be that. But it ends with another curling match between the angel and Santa. But
because the grandpa died and came back as an angel.
Yeah, he dies. He gets run over by Santa's sleigh.
Naturally.
E-I-G-H. He gets sleigh-slayed. And then, yeah, he comes back in the climax hours later. So he must have been, like, wheeling and dealing. Because that's another interesting thing about the movie is how quickly time moves. Like, suddenly we have 3 hours left. But then they'll get in a car chase across town. It's like, we only have an hour left. It's like, oh, we were chasing for 2 hours. Thanks for keeping me oriented. But that's an epic, 2-hour car chase we went through there. And then they're like going through this library for an hour and, you know, time is up, but not really, you know, all
that. What was the ticking clock for, like Santa being permanently a jerk?
Yeah, they were counting down till midnight at the North Pole because that's when Christmas ends and that's when Santa becomes powerless. He only has these powers and only kills people on Christmas.
Oh, but, so they just had to survive for that
long. Yeah, they had to survive until I think it was 7 p.m. local time, which is midnight at the pole. But the movie cleverly throws us off by, you know, making the deadline arbitrary. So so the deadline happens, and Nick's like, yeah, motherfucker, you go back to the pole. And Santa's like, yeah, well, the pole is all the time zones, so Christmas is over when I say it's over. And he keeps trying to kill him. So, wow.
It really pulls the wool over the audience's eyes. Another twist.
Yeah, it's a great Shyamalan right there at the end. That's more of a Village level twist.
Oh, what a twist. The time limit didn't mean shit. Incredible.
It's actually exactly a Village level twist. I mean, what a twist. The time period didn't mean shit.
The twist didn't mean snowballs.
Father Christmas.
Yeah,
so, but they do another curling match, and the stakes are higher because now if the angel wins, Santa has to be good forever, which he should have done the first time. But, yeah, you know,
it definitely seems like the millennia fly by when you're immortal.
Yeah, yeah. I guess he figured after 1,000 years of being good, it would stick. It does not stick. But Santa, if he wins, the angel has to throw himself into this hellhole and become a slave of his father, Satan, forever. So they curl.
Did Satan like come up and agree to that?
No. He's just
hoisting him upon Satan.
Santa's just assuming Satan's going to be cool with all this, with adopting this angel slave.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it's always good to have an angel lying around.
But another great twist is that Goldberg cheats and throws the angel in the hole without throwing his rock, his curling stone. Oh. Rude. So there's that. It's like that's like.
So so is this angel now a slave to Satan?
No, he manages to hang on, so he doesn't go down into hell. He's thrown in the hole, and you think he's gone down to hell forever, but it turns out after the Santa thing's resolved. Oh no, it's still a little bit more. But after Santa takes off, they find out he's still in the hole, and they fix him. They bring him back up.
Okay,
well, but he can't leave the. The ice rink. It's like there's some sort of mystical barrier that keeps him at the ice rink where the climax takes place.
Is this movie Canadian?
I didn't look.
Mine was Canadian. I forgot to mention that. It was one of the very first lines of spoken dialogue was like, sorry, I'm late.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know who made this, where it was made. It very well could have been Canadian because it has, with the curling, it has a very Canadian feel. Mm-hmm. Plus the library is adjacent to the ice rink. They're like the same building. So I just assume every library in Canada has an ice rink attached to it, which is just smart planning. It's like, you know, you're taking a break between hockey periods or between curling matches, and you go to the library and read up on, you know, ice or whatever Canadians read about.
When your brain's overheating from all that knowledge.
Yeah. So they chase Santa down because he's powerless now, and they blow him up with a bazooka.
Like you do.
But, you know, one final twist in this already topsy-turvy tornado
movie.
Oh,
man, another twist.
He shows up at the end, powerless, but alive, going back to the North Pole and waiting another year until he can enact his revenge.
So Santa Slays 2?
Yeah, Santa Slay. Right. I imagine it would be Santa Slay 2 T-O-O for the sequel title.
Oh, God. Isn't that Pet Sematary's method?
I'm pretty sure Pet Sematary 2 is just number 2. It's more of the Dumb and Dumber method.
Oh, yeah. There's like some movie.
Or Look Who's Talking. Look Who's Talking 2. Was T-O-O.
So clever.
So clever. Well,
so Bill Goldberg, this movie, you know what your movie's about? It's about recidivism and what it does to people.
Oh, man. Even a thousand that's a really years, good point. Yeah.
Even 1,000 years of prison can't fix this guy. What do you think you're going to do when you're jailing a bunch of people who don't deserve it?
Well, it's because the rehabilitation method for Santa is not effective. Like if through winning the bet, he had done something that he wanted to do but couldn't kill people, like he might have enjoyed his prison sentence more. I was like, forget about having to bring gifts to everybody and having to be Santa Claus. Like, just you can't kill for 1,000 years. I think after 1,000 years of doing whatever else he wanted to do, he probably would have forgotten about killing people.
Yeah, you boxed him into a hole, and what's he's just gonna, all that murderous energy is just gonna keep building and building.
They tormented him instead of
like tricking him into being like Santa. They should have sent him to like a Scandinavian prison system Yeah, you know,
where he gets to sit in a nice comfy cell and reads and gets his doctorate. And, you know, when after 1,000 years, he's rehabilitated and he's fine.
He'll probably just want to be Santa anyway.
Yeah, he'd probably just, yeah, enjoy. Like, he'd probably get bored and start doing Santa things just like a little bit, like experimentally. And then, you know, after a few years, it would stick. And after 1,000 years, like, oh, yeah, I forgot. I used to kill people every year. But now I'm just love being Santa. But because it's forced on him, he hates it.
Yeah, well, I think that's the true message of this movie is, you know, sometimes the jail can be worse than the crime.
All right, Johnny, what do you say, let's be honest?
Let's be honest here.
For a few minutes.
I didn't hate 48 Christmas Wishes, and I really thought I was going to, because I'm not a Christmassy person. I actually did get a little perclempt at the end, because the kids had a nice little arc. Holy moly, the kid actors.
Really bad.
I don't think these kids are ever going to hear this, but like, I don't want to just dog on some kids. I just don't think they were getting maybe the direction they needed. In a post-credit scene, and this is kind of like evocative of my opinion, is like, I don't blame the kids necessarily, because the Cam, who played the short human expert, who definitely wasn't Elf, the like behind the scenes post-credit like blooper reel of him was probably the best part of the movie. Just him like making these faces and flubbing his lines. It's like, wow, this is way funnier than anything they put into the movie. I did find some of like the North Pole stuff a bit amusing, like how godlike the Santa is to these elves was kind of ironically funny to me, and some of that undercurrent, you know, was amusing, but like definitely not the intended experience. But the like the message, the whole familial message was pretty kind of on the nose and simple, and the like comedy beats, some I laughed out loud maybe 2 or 3 times, which I would say is pretty good, but like some scenes were just like really kind of painful to slog through. And then they had one aside that I couldn't find a way to spin it to be good, but they had these two scenes and they felt like the producer getting their kids into the movie scenes. They had what were called time elves, and they were like these three kids being elves in a room, like they could somehow see that Christmas was in danger. And then two of the elves were just trying to improve the mood and were like dancing and were doing like the Fortnite dance. And it was like out of nowhere, and it didn't make any sense. And it just felt like these three kids auditioned and needed to be in the movie somehow. And so they made like one, like they could have cut both scenes and it wouldn't have affected the movie at all.
Were they like the precogs in Minority Report, that kind of situation?
I guess that would have been there. So they were time elves and Christmas was running out of time, and that was about all the like the plot relevant stuff. And then they like two of them were awkwardly dancing to try and improve their mood, and then like the very last scene of the movie was them collapsing because they could quit dancing, and they had been dancing this whole time, and I don't know what the fuck. I'm sorry, I don't know what the sugar plums that was all about.
Father Christmas.
what's your honest take on Santa sleighs?
Well,
I would rate it like 2 out of 5, like maybe would be fun for your dumb little family get together and your Canadian.
The first time I watched Santa's sleigh, it was in the middle of the night, or very, it was getting late. It was like 10 or 11 at night. At the end of a horror movie marathon. So we'd already been watching a bunch of weird, crazy shit, all as a group of friends. I think that's the night I watched John Carpenter's The Thing for the first time. So I just watched that a couple hours earlier, and I was still coming down off that high. So I really, really enjoyed Santa Slay the first time I watched it, because I was in the right mindset and the right environment. But watching it again on my own in Nevada, 15,000... across country from everyone I know and love, I did not enjoy it as much, because it's way more homophobic than I remembered. It's like, ooh. I remembered James Caan calling someone a fag, and I remembered the kid Nick making fun of the police chief for wearing what he calls gay apparel.
Oh, jeez.
But I didn't remember the grandfather calling Nick a Sally. He's like,
oh no.
He's like, go shoot up Santa Claus with a bazooka. I didn't raise no Sally. It's like, oh God, uncomfortable. I did
2005
like
2005 was a different time.
I really like though it kind of on this subject where at the beginning Nick's complaining about getting an easy bake oven, but it turns out that that's what he asked for when he was a kid. Like Santa has his letter from when he was a kid, and that's how he tracked him down was getting Nick's letter with his address. But in the letter he asked for the easy bake oven. I was like, "Oh, that's cute."
Well, yeah, it's a fun little the true twist at the end of it all.
Yeah, but since he's grown into someone who adheres entirely to heteronormative gender roles, and you know that sucks. He was a better kid than he is an adult.
That would be another thing for the remake to tackle. The Rob Zombie remake.
Yeah,
is really like get across like, hey man, you don't have to be like a fucking beefcake like Bill Goldberg to be manly.
My huge problem though is the curling. Like,
oh, the curling.
I am a huge curling fan, and this movie makes no fucking sense with the curling. So here's how it works. Another thing I was gonna praise about the movie. It's kind of cool. It's just kind of weird and dumb. Is when they're telling the story of the angel and Santa making their original bet 1,000 years ago. It moves into this like animation, stop motion animation section. And I was like, that's ambitious and fun.
It's like the Christmas special claymation, yeah,
it's
right?
Kinda, it's definitely a reference to that. It's kind of in that style.
Jack Frost and the story of Santa.
Exactly. It's cleaner than that, but it's definitely supposed to be in that aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
But Santa is so convinced he's going to win this curling match. They each throw one rock, which isn't how curling works, but they each throw one rock. And Santa goes first, and he gets his rock really close to the center, really close to this hole. And then all the angel has to do is hit his rock into the hole and he wins. It's like, yeah, of course, that's the easiest thing you could do. That's why having the last rock in a real curling match is such an advantage, and why you need so much more strategy than just knocking the last rock out of the way to get your 1 point. It's like, you want to score multiple points. So I don't know, they could have done the curling better, had a different had them play hockey or something, I don't know. So this is the only movie I can think of that has curling in it, but they got it wrong. So the second time they curl, and the grandfather goes first and he gets it right on the edge, and they're like super happy and Santa's super pissed off. But all Santa has to do is throw his rock and hit the other rock into the hole and he wins. That's how it works. According to the rules of the first match.
But he went ahead and cheated and fucked it up.
Yeah, but instead he decides to take the angel and throw him in the hole for no reason. He could have legitimately won and sent the angel to hell forever, and he could continue to slay people forever. All he had to do was throw the rock and hit the other rock out of the way or into the hole. And that's how the angel won the first time, so that's how he would have won this time. So dumb.
He just had so much self-doubt and, you know, inner conflict. And so
he's
just
so insecure.
In desperation.
So insecure that cheating. He has to cheat, yeah. But nothing else is a challenge for him in this movie at all, so I don't know where that insecurity is coming from.
On paper, the Santa Slays concept, I would say, is a more interesting, like, slasher during Christmas setup to me than, like, Black Christmas, where people are just, like, scarred by Christmas and use the iconography. Like, having a magical being like Santa kind of do it, it's kind of like Krampus, too. Like, I don't know, That's a more interesting setup for a Christmas horror movie to me.
This feels like someone saw the Futurama Santa Claus and was like, oh, we could do that for a movie. We'll just make it legally different.
Oh, I do like the robots, evil robot Santa.
Yeah, those are great episodes of Futurama. Especially the first one where they introduce that idea where everyone's terrified of robot Santa because he comes down and kills people. Yeah.
They got John Goodman to do the voice. And
oh, did they really? That's awesome.
Yeah, he does the voice in the first one, but he's a little too rich for their blood for the repeats. So it's John DiMaggio doing a John Goodman impression from then on.
That's fun.
Oh, man. I went through all my notes. Christmas Wishes is a pretty short, you know, if you've seen a movie aimed at young kids and families, you've seen them, most of them. Yeah. Some of the kid actors are trying too hard. Some of them are like not trying hard enough, and it's kind of weird. I would say the oldest teen, Emma, does the best job as in the kid group, but in Cam's okay. But yeah, they were pretty rough to watch.
Yeah, and Santa Slay is just dated. Is its biggest problem.
Did not age well.
I mean, the homophobic stuff is just gets worse year after year, just more and more uncomfortable. Some of the like punny jokes are really cringeworthy.
Can't have a holiday slasher without bad puns.
I feel like I had questions for when we got into the let's be honest section. Why doesn't this kid have his own set of keys? Like, he's constantly like breaking into his own house because he doesn't have his own keys. There's like two keys hidden on the porch and he needs both of them to get into the house, but he doesn't have his own set of keys. Oh, that was weird.
He needs two different keys to get into his house.
Yeah. Because the grandfather's that paranoid that Santa's going to come and try and kill him.
But he knows exactly when Santa's coming.
I know. Nah. It's just...
Oh, yeah. This movie, no plot holes. It makes sense. You just had to read the script.
Mary's kind of comfortable with her body and kind of sex positive, so I like that. It's like they clearly haven't had sex, but she says at one point, am I going to have to make every first move in this relationship? And puts his hands on her breasts to get to... so that he will push her through this window. It's like they're trying to get her through this window and he like doesn't know how to where to touch her. And she's like, just grab my chest and push me through. So
yeah, you tell him, girl, burn that bra.
I like that actress. I've seen her in other things. She's in Chronicle. But yeah, it's super weird, especially the end where they open fire on Santa. The reindeer is not a reindeer. It's more like Appa from Last Airbender.
Oh, it's like a buffalo, right?
Yeah, it's like a flying buffalo thing. And everyone who sees it recognizes that it's a reindeer. Like all the hunters at the end are like, I'm going to get me a reindeer for my thing. And one of them was looking through a binoculars like, yep, that's a reindeer, all right. It's like, is that a reindeer?
Is it supposed to be like a ripped reindeer, like just bulked up?
No, it's a buffalo. It's a white buffalo that flies.
I guess that was supposed to be part of the joke?
I guess. I don't know. It's strange. I mean, like, I'm fine with them changing it from a reindeer, but people should stop calling it a reindeer. They should know what a reindeer looks like.
Especially if they're Canadian.
Nick keeps like reiterating the plot and setup of the movie. He'll constantly like, anytime there's a down moment, he's like, I can't believe Santa's trying to kill us of all people. I was like... Yeah, we've been watching the movie, Nick. Thank you.
It's for those syndication audiences. If you tune in midway, you don't want to get lost.
Yeah.
Exactly. Why is Santa killing everybody? Avert your eyes, little Jimmy.
He was on the HBO series Big Love. He was pretty good on that, but this is not using him to his full potential.
Is it the main kid?
Yeah, the main kid, Nick. He's the eldest son on Big Love.
What's Bill Goldberg doing these days? Any big movie projects?
I doubt it.
I don't think I had a single star in my movie. I was about to double check.
No one you recognized? I don't think
even the Santa was like a big name. IMDb. Who is Santa? Santa was played by Paul Dick? I do not know who this guy is. It looks like he's a Canadian.
There's a character in my movie whose last name is Cock. And one of the characters says, he sucks. And the other character says, cock?
Jesus. So. He has 4 acting credits, all of them for Santa.
He only plays Santa? That's hilarious. Oh, man.
Maybe these are sequels. The Truth About Christmas, a Christmas Recipe for Romance, and then coming soon, Twinkle All the Way.
I mean, stay tuned for next year's Dick Picks where I make Johnny watch A Christmas Recipe for Romance or whatever the fuck that was.
You assume I make it through these movies. Yeah, no, he's just is Santa. He's professional Santa. Oh, I think I've seen this A Christmas Recipe for Romance. I think I did see that on Netflix. Oh, and on the poster, based on a Harlequin novel. Oh, boy.
Oh, that sounds even better.
Yeah, well, if you remember next year, make me watch A Christmas Recipe for Romance.
Well, this has been really fun.
Yeah, I would definitely do this again with a non-Christmas movie.
I have an idea for a February episode, if you want to do it again in a couple months.
Heck yeah.
But we should do some plugs and recommendations.
I recommend Word Salad Podcast and Productions and all their stuff they do.
Aw, thank you. I think they're already listening to that, though.
Great. Then they're already on board. I don't have any really strong plugs. I'm going to be just working on some projects for them. I have a little scheme to turn some old podcasts into videos. Joe can cut that out if it's still top secret.
I mean, by the time this comes out, it might already be live and happening, so.
Yeah, I'll hopefully have it. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I think, I don't know, I just think some of the old podcasts could definitely work as videos, whether they're cut up or as is, but, you know, maybe get a different audience that way.
I like it.
How about you? What's cool in your world?
I want to recommend, I don't know if I've already recommended on the air, but I watched The Wolf's Call on Netflix like last week.
Is that the one with the guy from Westworld is like a wolf expert?
No, it's a French submarine movie. So it's kind of like Crimson Tide, where a submarine gets a nuclear order by mistake, and this other submarine has to like try and stop them from launching their nuclear missiles and starting World War III. And it's fucking awesome. It's so good.
Is it a movie or a miniseries?
It's a movie, yeah.
Can you find it on Netflix?
It's a Netflix original, yeah. Cool. Or, you know, Build is a Netflix original. It seems like it was made in France and just distributed by Netflix.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of movies. It's like, oh, don't send it to Netflix. Nobody wants to distribute it.
But this is a great movie. It's one of the best movies I've seen this year, probably.
Cool.
I'll recommend that. And last night I watched Men Go to Battle, I believe it's called. And it's about these two brothers living on a farm. And the farmland's kind of worthless, so they're just struggling to get by. And it's Civil War era, so one of them goes and joins the Union Army, and they write letters back and forth. And it's really like melancholy, but also really funny. And I was trying to think, like, it feels like a combination between two different directors, like Wes Anderson and M. Night Shyamalan made a movie together. So it's fun.
What's it called again?
Men Go to Battle.
That's Netflix.
That one was on Tubi. T-U-B-I. Tubi's a free streaming service. I use that quite a bit. They got like old Riff Tracks episodes and stuff on there.
Nice. Well, I guess there's a couple channels on YouTube that I watch a lot. One's called Kings and Generals, if you like history a lot. I've been watching a ton of those. They'll do like battle reenactments and have good videos. And then if you're a horror fan, this guy has a ton of subscribers anyway. He's already in the millions, but he doesn't need a plug for me. But Dead Meat is a cool YouTube channel. They go through and analyze horror movies and count the kills usually, but it's usually a really good review. James A. Janisse is a Michigan native, and he's always really funny. And he did an episode on Santa Slays, which is how I know it exists.
Oh, okay. But I'll have to look that up.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's Dead Meat is the name of the channel on YouTube, but all of his videos are pretty good. But yeah, I'll be looking forward to our next internet get together.
Now that you have a capacity to record, we can do this much more often.
I know. I'm gonna be all techie here, watching the sound waves go.
Staying on top of it.
Stay on top of it. Well, killing the stream midway.
Well, the listeners can follow the show on Twitter at Word Salad Radio, or join the Word Salad Radio Heads Facebook group and get active with that. If you want to help support us, you can contribute to patreon.com/wordsalad. And if you can't afford to do that, then please leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. All of that is just awesome. So that's all I have.
I agree. Follow this on any way you can, because not enough independent media out there.
That's right. You don't need the Disney Plus.
No, they already Joe have Plus. All your
money. you need Word Salad Radio.
All right. Well,
we have exclusive content too.
Yeah, that's right. You don't need that Disney stuff. It's all about the Joe stuff.
All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Johnny, for doing this.
My pleasure. Till next time.
Good night, everybody. I bet you ain't Rudolph, I bet you killed him. I bet you tell a dasher up limb by limb. I just have a question, I just can't see why you gotta be so mean to me.